The views and opinions of shows on KCNR are those of the hosts, guests, and callers only, and do not necessarily reflect those of the staff, management, or advertisers of KCNR Radio.
Good morning. Another Sunday on We the People Radio. KCNR, 1460, home of Free Fire Media. Wow, it's nice to have you all here. Call us, 530-605-4567. Or streaming live and chatting, go to wethepeopleradio.us. Yes, that is wethepeopleradio.us. And no, that is not the same website we usually give out, but we're trying to streamline things and make it as easy for you as we possibly can. So,
and it goes to all the same
things,
page.
It does. So, yeah. It's all things We the People. And when you do go to that link, you will come to our media page, which will give you all the information about our guest today, as well as the archives from previous shows. We are nothing less than an informative library of a lot of great topics, incredible speakers and guests. So check out that media page. And good morning, Aaron.
And every now and then it's buffoonery and pratfalls. That was last week.
But that was fun. We got a lot of compliments on all of our BSing back and forth for an hour and a half.
Like, that was a really good show. It's like, oh boy.
Yeah, some people said we should do that about once a month. Just get on there and talk about what we know and banter back and forth. And good morning, Bob. You are sitting in for Chandler this morning.
I am, Elizabeth. Good morning.
Good morning. Aaron.
Yeah, we don't usually roust you at 8 o'clock in the morning.
Yes.
He does the afternoon program.
See, on Sunday mornings, there's only one car on the street, and it was Bob's, and we did not recognize it.
It didn't have an InfoWars bumper sticker. You're going to need to upgrade.
I have to keep reminding myself of what day of the week it is. I read the news. I do the news before Carl and Linda come on weekday mornings, and I also engineer Alana Burke's show.
So, great.
So today you're going to learn all about technocracy.
Hey, so Bob, right. Don't you think the parking's a lot easier on Sunday morning?
Amazing difference.
He's rolling. So we have Patrick Wood on the line with us, and for those of you that tuned in last week, he was the guy that was on there just at the end, and I know a lot of people said, but that wasn't enough. So we're doing it again this week. And technocracy is a wide topic, and Mr. Wood actually has a ton of information on a variety of other subjects.
So he just basically whetted our appetite last week.
Yeah, that was just like a commercial. Pat, are you in there?
He's on the line. Good morning.
I am here. Yes, I am. I was glad it was late last week.
I was like, don't mess around with this. Where are you?
We're done teasing.
So tell folks about yourself. I've got your bio here, but it's more fun if you tell them than if I read it. So
what brings you to where you're at?
I've been researching and writing about the global elite for about 35 years. And I started originally back in the 1970s writing with a gentleman by the name of Anthony Sutton, who was who had been a professor at Stanford University. He was a research fellow at the Hoover Institution for War, Peace, and Revolution. And we met at a conference originally down in New Orleans, out of our home, both of our home territories. And we ran into each other and made an acquaintance, and within about 30 minutes realized that we had been studying the same topic, the same group of people, which later became known, or we popularized the organization called the Trilateral Commission. And we felt the story was so big at the time that we partnered up to write a newsletter and a couple of books. And so we spent a lot of time and a number of years documenting the Trilateral Commission and following them. And I've been pretty much doing that ever since. So here we are up to today. Professor Sutton passed away in 2002, and that kind of left me as a custodian of the knowledge base, if you will. And so I'm still writing about the Trilateral Commission. The reason that's important, by the way, is that in 1973, when they were created, not a government organization, they stated that they wanted to create a new international economic order, That was their words, their phrase. And both Sutton and myself were economists, and so we were sensitive to that kind of stuff. You know, if somebody says they want to create a new international economic order, we pay attention.
You believed them?
And it wasn't, I mean, you know, a crackpot on the street corner could stand up and say that, wouldn't care. But these people were the movers and shakers of the world at the time, the David Rockefellers types, for instance, and, you know, the big banking organizations, big industrial organizations and stuff. And so when those kind of people get together and say they're going to create a new international economic order, it's something worth listening to. And we listened, and we researched, and we listened to what they said, what they wrote, and we did not like what we saw, I have to say, at all. And so that's why we did what we did. And so today, still tracking it, and you'll see in a minute how the topic of technocracy ties into this, but I'll leave that out there for now, I guess.
Now, you're the editor of the August Review.
And that's correct. The August Review, and actually I'm kind of consolidating my web presence as well to a single site called the August Forecast and Review. But AugustReview.com is one of my addresses that will get you there. And all of the information that I have on the Trilateral Commission is there from years past and current. And also now, as I'm writing about technocracy, all the information on technocracy is there also. And I do believe, it's my strong opinion, that technocracy fits hand in glove into the original concept of a new international economic order. And that's why I've got the two topics mixed together at AugustReview.com.
Well, it certainly makes their intent to organize the way that they want a little easier using technology.
It does. What we missed back in the 70s, and I missed it. I'm almost ashamed that I did. But what we missed is that they were really envisioning something brand new. It's not that they were just rearranging the existing economic order, which had been, but honestly, it had been done two or three times in the last 100 years, where forces of society or you know, elitists, whatever, have bumped the economy and shifted it. And, you know, once they figure out how to game the system for themselves, you know, all the sharks, you know, they swim around the blood. You know, they try and get as much money out of it as they can. And so we figured that, well, okay, this is just another attempt to kind of game the economic system, but on a global basis this time. But we were wrong. Looking back now, in view of historic technocracy, what they were envisioning was a brand new economic system that had nothing to do at all with the old economic system. And this is something that the world has never seen before, this concept of technocracy. It's never been applied before anywhere in the history of the world. And in a nutshell, if I give it to you in a nutshell, our economy today is based on price. You buy something at the store, there's a currency, we call it in our country the dollar. The dollar is valued according to what people think it should be valued. So if you buy a loaf of bread for $2 one day or $3 the next day, you made a transaction based on price. And the seller believes that that's what he can use for profit, and you believe that's what you can use for your tummy. And so you make a deal and you buy a loaf of bread based on price. Well, you could extrapolate that and figure out that all of the economic system today is based on price. One way or another is based on price, free market economy, etc. Technocracy proposes a resource-based economy rather than price-based economy, a resource-based economy.
Now, what's the difference between the two?
Well, the difference between the two is, in a resource-based economy, there is no money. There's energy credits, essentially.
Gosh, like carbon credits?
Like carbon credits, like carbon currency, that prices things according to the amount of carbon that's required to make that thing. So, engineers and scientists that dreamed this up originally, they figured out all these formulas and stuff and how this would work. It's understandable enough if you go back and read it, I guess. They were pretty clear. But basically, anything that's produced on the world today, anywhere, is has theoretically some energy value. It took work by somebody to create something, whether it's a shirt or, you know, baking the bread or driving, you know, making a car or delivering a gallon of gas to you so you can buy it to put in your car. Everything can be priced according to, or can be valued according to, the energy it took to make that item. And this is the concept of energy credits, or, you know, carbon currency or whatever. And this would be a radical shift from the price-based economy we have today. And we can see the push, the evidence of this resource-based accounting all around us is coming with sustainable development, Agenda 21 type stuff. But one of the scariest things about a resource-based economy, as they proposed it, and I say they, back in the 1930s, this group that called themselves Technocracy Inc., they proposed an economy or a, you know, society that that would distribute these energy credits to everybody basically on an equal basis. So you and I would both get the same number of energy credits every month. And if we didn't use our energy credits by the end of the month, they would expire, and we would be issued new energy credits. And the amount of credits available to be issued were predicated on, well, how much energy is there in the system to distribute this month? In other words, what's the total, the total allocation that we can possibly have, divided by 6 billion people, and give everybody their energy credits for the period. And then they expire at the end of that month if they're not used, and you have to wait for your next allocation. Kind of like food stamps in a way.
Good grief. But and so hold that thought, and when we come back, you're going to tell us who gets to calculate this, because in case you're not, you know, your hair's not standing straight up now, when you find out who's calculating it, it will be.
And maybe also talk a little bit about how critical the resources are, and when there's someone in control of them, that's got a real dire effect on people's lives.
Oh, yeah. Sure. We're coming, the whole program's about what's dire in people's lives, I think.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, yet one more time. So we'll be back with Patrick Wood of the August Review here on We the People Radio in just 2 minutes. We're at KCNR 1460, home of Free Fire Media.
A vehicle, a boat, or even a plane that needs to be transported, you need Miller Auto Transport. In the auto business for over 40 years, we take pride in the efficiency, the professionalism, and the safety of our transport teams. Unmatched by any other auto transport or carrier company in the nation, we transport to all 50 states and overseas. To find out more or to get a quote, visit our website at millerautotransport.com.
This is KCNR, the home of Free Fire Media.
Okay, folks, it's urgent. You need to listen to We the People Radio.
.us.
.us. Go to that link or give us a call at 530-605-4567. Do want to remind you that the tenets of this radio show are fiscal responsibility, limited government, and adherence to the Constitution.
Yeah, my mom always asks me, well, honey, what would we do if we didn't have any government? I'm like, Mom, limited doesn't mean no government. So for those of you that are getting some pushback, they might be thinking that we're talking about no government.
Not at all.
At this point, no government is probably a pretty good goal, but okay.
Yeah, it'd be nice to start from scratch.
All right, in a beautiful world, limited is all we get. So, okay, Mr. Wood, come back and talk to us some more about energy credits.
Well, I'll pick up the thought on this. I'd like to read just a short paragraph from the Technocracy Study course that was written in 1932. This is when the body of technocracy thought was put together, and there was an actual organization in America called the Technocracy Inc. They incorporated into organization. They had, it's a membership organization. And they had hundreds of thousands of members in just a couple of short years. And California alone, you're from California, California alone had a 500,000 members of Technocracy.
Big surprise.
It was wildly popular back then because, you know, people figured that the Great Depression was the end of capitalism. A lot of people really thought capitalism was dead, that it had outlived its usefulness, and by and large, they believed it was dead because technology had been introduced into society. And they saw, you know, things like, you know, automation and, you know, Ford Motor Company was automating assemblies of cars, stuff like that. They saw technology as being the instrument that broke capitalism. And so when they proposed this new system of technocracy, it was a replacement economic system. It wasn't, you know, they figured, well, we need something new. And some of the other competing philosophies back then included Marxism. Communism was just getting started in the Bolshevik Revolution in 1918. And you had fascism was growing in Europe at that time. And so there was a lot of competing philosophies in the world. And technocracy was one that just got missed by historians. I don't know why. There's a lot of stuff written about the other things, like communism and socialism and fascism, but very little written about technocracy. But here's what they one of the proposals in their main document of that era, they wrote, "Energies," and this is a direct quote, "energy certificates are issued individually to every adult of the entire population. The record of one's income and its rate of expenditure is kept by the distribution sequence," that's in capital letters, "so that it is a simple matter at any time for the distribution sequence to ascertain the state of a given customer's balance. When making purchases of either goods or services, an individual surrenders the energy certificates properly identified and signed. The significance of this from the point of view of knowledge of what is going on in the social system and a social control can best be appreciated when one surveys the whole system in perspective. First, one single organization is manning and operating the whole social mechanism. The same organization not only produces but also distributes all goods and services." Do you get the point?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Fed look like the Fed's got like training wheels compared to these guys.
Well, right. You see, they didn't have the technology to do this back in the 1930s, and I expect that they knew it. Being engineers and scientists that they were, they saw technology advancing, and I'm sure they saw the day, kind of like, you know, science fiction visionaries, they saw the day when technology would be sufficient to accomplish these requirements. And today it is, and with, you know, with computers and supercomputers and stuff like that, and artificial intelligence and so on, there is the technology today to achieve what they wanted to do in the 1930s. One of the other corollaries to this is that there's no accumulation of wealth. That's not allowed in a system like this. And so they reason, well, what do you need wealth for? You know, if everybody has everything that they need, why do you need to hoard?
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know,
no, we'll give you everything you need when you need it.
Hoarding, it's a no-no. It's a bad thing. And so they envision that everybody will be equal all throughout society, and that the scientific managers, so to speak, will control the social mechanism down to what is produced and what is consumed on every individual basis. And this is scary stuff. Aaron.
Now, if people are actually productive and working in some type of job or position, who would they be working for?
Well, they would tell you who to work for and where to work. That's the thing. You would not have a choice. You would work where they assign you to work. Let me give you a parallel, not a parallel example, but a science fiction example. A book was written in 1932 by an author named Aldous Huxley.
Mm-hmm.
He wrote a book called Brave New World. Now, a lot of your listeners are going to identify with Brave New World, especially those that are probably over 50, maybe 45, 50 like that. Brave New World was a very popular book back then. It was considered a classic by the 60s. And Huxley was viewing technocracy when he wrote that book. And essentially, it was a scientific dictatorship where every facet of life was controlled down to how you were born, what your genetic makeup looked like, where you would be assigned to work, genetic screening on so they could determine your intelligence and stuff even before you're born, and what level, what station of managerism you would have in the society. And it was a complete scientific dictatorship where everything was decided by technology and you just went along with the program. In other words, you were a slave to the technological system that was the dictator. And if you want to understand kind of the social, you know, how would this play out in a social setting, go and get the book Brave New World and read it. Huxley was a pretty brilliant guy, actually, in terms of writing, and he had a way of expressing things that were very pointed. But most people didn't know, in any case, even in the 60s, when I had to read the book in high school, they forced us to do it. It was one of those readings you had to do and made a book report on it. I had no idea technocracy was involved. But go and get a copy of that book. You'll see where scientific dictatorship is leading. And it's not a pretty picture.
No, and for those people that that aren't sure if this is real or not, I guess I always like to do a little search online, and I like to see what other sites are up about that topic. And then I stumble on technocracy.ca, so I'm assuming this is a California group.
And actually, that's Canada.
Oh, is it Canada? Okay, so I click on the goals. Yeah, the goals of a technocratic society are simply, I use this word simply in the first five, I'm like, uh-oh, red flag. Simply to provide its citizens with the highest possible standard of living while maintaining the ability to do this for the longest possible period. It accomplishes this through the intelligent use of technology to increase productive output while decreasing the amount of work required by the population. Oh my gosh, I think, you know, we burst into sunshine here, you know, on this cloudy day. You read stuff like that and you go, what?
Well, this was a utopian society that they were dreaming of back then. And of course, as you read the book or read comments about the book Brave New World, it'll present it as a utopian society. And by and large, a utopian society is only wishful thinking. You know, it's like, well, yeah, you never get there, but, you know, that would be one scenario, you know, that could control the whole world. But for all the pie-in-the-sky thinking that these guys had back in the 1930s, Aaron, this stuff is all around us now and advancing with breakneck speed to take us into this technocratic state. And if this is the end game of the global elite, then our ladder's been leading up against the wrong wall for a number of years because...
Mm-hmm.
You know, yeah. People are out there
fighting the wrong thing,
even in the Patriot movement for that matter, are out there fighting Marxism and socialism and fascism and, you know, all this other stuff. And technocracy is none of those things. It's not even close. And if we're fighting the wrong enemy, and that enemy is advancing on us at racing speed, we're in trouble. When they finally hit us, they're going to capture us, and we won't even see it coming.
Yeah, this is like one of those jungle movies where you're looking for the guys to come running out of the bushes with the spear, except you're standing in the net and they're pulling on the rope. We're gonna come back and finish that theme there in a couple of minutes here on We the People Radio. You're listening to KCNR 1460 AM, the home of Free Fire Media.
Robinson, heaven holds a place for those who pray.
If your tax advisor tells you your legal deductions are red flags, it's time for North State Consultants in Reading.
Our team specializes in reducing your tax liability using IRS policies and administrative law. As the most aggressive and qualified tax preparation and audit litigation specialists in the business, we offer tax and trust assistance with audits, late filings, overdue taxes, and more. For more information, visit our website at northstateconsultants.com.
Join the conversation in our chat room, KCNR1460.com.
Every breath you take.
I don't know if I want to live in a place where somebody's watching every step I take.
Actually, they'll be measuring it.
Yeah.
They'll be measuring it for your carbon credit allotment.
Too many footsteps, too many footprints. Welcome back to We the People Radio. To join us, call us at 530-605-4567 or go to wethepeopleradio.us. Check out our media page and find out all about our guest today, Mr. Patrick Wood, editor of the August Review and expert on technocracy.
And the Trilateral Commission. We've got to do a whole thing on that. You've got some people out there going, what happened? He didn't talk enough about it. But let's keep going down the technocracy trail, because this leads right to smart meters.
Well, I guess, yeah, it does.
Then we've got a lot of people out there who think, oh, smart meters, it's just not that big a deal. It's just not going to be a problem.
I was going to say that this whole movement, really knows how to spin the language, don't they?
Well, yeah, they do. And there's it's a whole new way of thinking. It's doublespeak, in a sense, where certain words have been redefined. But it doesn't take too much after you look at it to figure out what they're saying. And, you know, certain buzzwords, especially when it involves forcing society to do one thing or another, that sends up a red flag. And, you know, how presumptuous it is of anyone to presume that they can force society to do anything. It's none of their stinking business, you know. Somebody in my neighborhood, comes over and says, well, I don't like the outline around your grass. You need to change that. And I say, well, look, it's my grass. I paid for it, and I work it, and you know, you can't tell me how to lay out my yard. It's none of your business.
Yeah, and right now we've invented redevelopment, so right now we could say, oh, but you know what? That looks like blight to us. So,
I know.
So we're just going to pretty it up and spend taxpayers' money and indenture them to a 40-year bond it improvement.
I saw an article in the newspaper just a few days ago where I don't recall where it was at, but a woman was taken to task by her local government for planting her vegetable garden in her front yard.
Oh, yeah, that's against the law.
That's right. She has to take it out. And she's being fined and everything else, and it's just absolutely ridiculous. But you see, this is kind of part of the thinking that we see in technocracy. And somebody would argue that, well, the 1930s are the 1930s, and come on, this is, you know, it's 2011. That's all irrelevant back there, and nobody thinks that way now. Well, Buckminster Fuller, of course, is dead, but he was a technocrat at heart as well, and he did a lot of stuff. In fact, he was the guy that proposed the global smart grid, which we're going to be talking about before the show's done, I'm sure. But the Buckminster Fuller Institute has a number of papers and stuff on their website. I'll just read you one statement. This is modern. This is on their website today, written by somebody today that, you know, in the philosophy of Buckminster Fuller. It says, and I quote, surplus accumulations of financial wealth, which would be wiped out by the, quote, planet crunch, close quote, can be switched by the wealthy into investments that secure all forms of wealth and flatten inequality. Now,
wow.
Modern thinking.
Yeah.
I mean, that's like somebody just socking you in the solar plexus. What the heck are they talking about? And statements like this, you know, when you hear Barack Obama talk about spreading the wealth, He's not talking about necessarily about socialism, although it can be equated as, you know, you can view it as socialism, but it could just as easily be interpreted as being flattening inequality. You see, that's a goal of technocracy, is to flatten inequality.
Sure. If you're going to spread the wealth, you have to have control over it to spread it.
That's right.
And here on...
Everybody's equal under this this big system. And, you know, the rich and stuff are expected just to give up their wealth to the common good. Another statement by Buckminster Fuller Institute says, exploitive commodification of the Earth's surface can be switched to guardianship by international treaty that interprets ownership as responsibility for future generations. Now, here you have the essence of sustainable development. Guardianship of the, you know, by international treaty. That's exactly what they're doing to us. And, you know, they're, in other words, they're telling you how to set up your resources to serve future generations, et cetera. Of course, it serves them as much as anything right now. But, you know, that's the pitch. That's the pitch that's being used today.
Not good.
It's pretty scary.
It is scary. And we have Gerald online, too. Gerald's got a question or a comment for Mr. Wood.
Good morning.
Hi,
good morning,
Gerald.
How are you guys? Great show.
Thank you.
Many years ago, I attended a seminar here in Reading, and the subject matter was the emerging Chinese Empire. And the point that the speaker made was that the Chinese have always been the best of any country of managing the land and managing the people. And all they needed was the third leg of that situation, and his point was, now they have the computer, which is a third leg, which is they're then able to accumulate and assimilate information, and that they would have the perfect scenario in order to manage the country that way. And I thought that fit in somewhat with what your speaker was discussing this morning.
What do you think, Patrick? Any comments on that?
Well, I do, and it's interesting. If you do a search for Time Magazine, Technocracy, and China, you will find an article written in Time Magazine in 2001 called Made in China, The Revenge of the Nerds. Now, the title has nothing to do with the content, really, of the article. But the author she nails it right on the head in terms that you know, would relate to what we're talking about in technocracy. China is a technocracy. I never would have guessed this, you know, 5 years or so before. I wouldn't have said that because I didn't understand technocracy at all. But China is a technocracy, and there's all kinds of evidence to that effect, that it shifted from a communist society to a technocracy. And for instance, all of its leaders right now have either degrees in electrical engineering or electronic engineering, advanced degrees at least, in some kind of a scientific field, and they are running China according to technocracy philosophy, and they're moving ahead to reform the entire country into a technocratic state. And this article really nails it. It was early, actually, and early on in the movement, to the visible movement to technocracy. But China, remember, was opened up by Henry Kissinger in 1968 on that secret trip he made when he was Secretary of State under Nixon to China to talk with the communist Chinese leaders and open up China for trade. Kissinger became, in 1973, one of the founding members of the Trilateral Commission, of course. And Zbigniew Brzezinski, who was the co-founder with David Rockefeller of that organization, Zbigniew Brzezinski, as it turns out, looking backwards now, very clearly was a technocrat. And we know that from his 1968 book called Between Two Ages, America's Role in the Technotronic Era, technotronic was a knockoff word for technocracy. We didn't recognize it back then, but looking at it now, it's clear. And so when China was opened up by Richard Nixon, and then starting in the early 1970s, when development of China started to, we started to reform it in the Western, you know, supposedly in the Western venue, China was not reinvented as a socialist country. It was reinvented by these people as a technocratic country. And today, it needs to be classed as a technocracy, not any other political entity. It's not a communist society anymore. It is totalitarian. Don't get me wrong there. But just because it's totalitarian does not mean that it's communism. There are multiple types of totalitarianism. Technocracy is one of them. But technocracy is historically always taken issue with communism and Marxism. They were bitter enemies in the 1930s, and my guess is they're bitter enemies today as well. They're competing totalitarian systems. They do not like each other, and there are significant differences between them. But anyways, long story short, yes, China is a technocracy. Now that they're sucking technology in from all over the world, whether they invent it or not, doesn't mean anything to them. They're stealing, begging, borrowing, and inventing technology to dominate their own society and then to spread that domination throughout the world. And they're doing a great job of it, by the way.
So in simpler terms, basically the world would be run by a software program. So if you're having issues with your water bill or your electric bill or anything that affects your daily lives, you're not going to be able to talk to a person about it. You're going to have to fight a software program.
Which cannot be fought.
No.
That's part of the big problem here. There's no accountability in the system, and the scientists and engineers believe, well, there is no decision to be made. If it's a scientific fact, you need to just line up with reality and just accept it. But of course, we know science can be skewed, and you know, you say, well, what's the difference between good science and bad science when you're dealing with a PhD? Well, you want to bet your life on all the body of global warming science right now? A lot of people are, and a lot of people say, "Well, that's absolute science. It's indisputable." But yet, 30,000 other good scientists dispute it and say we disagree.
Patrick, it's 63 degrees here in Reading in the middle of the summer.
In July.
So, you know, global warming around here, the wings have come off the plane and we're into a hard spin toward the earth. But we've got to take a quick 2-minute break since we missed the last one. We'll be back with you in 2 minutes on We the People Radio with Patrick Wood and Technocracy here at KCNR 1460 AM, the home of Free Fire Media.
Hear us streaming 24/7 on KCNR1460.com.
Battle lines being drawn. Nobody's right if everybody's wrong. Young people speak in their minds. Are getting so much resistance.
Okay, and that kind of sums it up. Welcome back to We the People Radio. Join us, We the People Radio dot us. That's our new link to our media page. Or give us a call at 530-605-4567. We're enjoying a beautiful day in Redding, California, in the middle of July. We were kind of laughing about global warming earlier, and hey, if this is global warming, I am all for it.
I know. It's sweet. It's like global warming for the coast.
Yeah, it's nice.
I woke up this morning, I'm like, have I been teleported to Eureka? It's fantastic.
And it's all because of us. Yeah. So we can take credit for this beautiful day.
There you go.
The human footprint. So powerful.
And then we had a little engineering snafu. We hung up on Gerald and we hung up on Mr. Wood, but But Pat's called us back, and Gerald, if you still have a question, could you call us back too? We're sorry. Had a little fumble on the play there.
I think Gerald was done. He hung up.
Oh, he did. Okay.
Okay.
Bye, Gerald. Sorry, we're not so good. We're okay getting people in on the question, but we're
not
our
so
social
good at,
skills are bad with thanks for calling. See you later. So thanks for calling. See you later. And I hope you're getting a nice cloudy day out in Palo Cedro too.
So give us a call or join the chat room.
Absolutely. Okay. At 605-4567. All right.
And we're talking about
all that
technology and the potential total control of the human spirit, the human experience, all things human.
By technology.
By technology. By scientists.
All right, Pat.
And engineers pushing a button.
We're going crazy.
And
well,
deep breath.
The concept of China as being the rising power in the world today should be viewed in the context of technocracy. Rather than communism or Marxism or socialism. That was my main point. And if our ladder has been leaning up against the wrong wall for all these years, you know, chasing socialism and or fighting socialism and communism, I believe that we have missed the entire invasion, if you will. Because we can see China rising throughout the world. They're in every continent. Scrapping for resources, scrapping for control, and you know, it's kind of like I hate to use the science fiction parallel here, but there was a race in the famous Star Trek series for you Trekkies. There was a race called the Borg.
That's on our chat room. They've been chatting about this on our chat room now for about 10 minutes.
Funny. And the Borg had one mind. You know, all the people were plugged into the collective mind, and they only moved and acted according to the group mind. And so every time they came in contact with a foreign species, they simply just incorporated into their beehive mind. And their famous statement was, when they meet somebody new like that, is that they want to, you know, wrap in, they say, "We will assimilate."
Wow.
We will assimilate.
Something to be said for that.
And this is like China. This is what, you know, China right now, for instance, right this weekend, the National Governors Conference is meeting in Utah with Chinese delegation to figure out how to make deals and stuff in the various states with the governors. To bring China into or more of China into America, and they're, you know, the governors in the individual states now are making huge economic deals and technology deals with the Chinese, and what they don't realize is the Chinese, you know, like the Borg, are just quietly saying, "We will assimilate. You know, thank you very much for inviting us to the National Governors Conference. Let's make a deal."
Yeah, they've got hundreds of these guys. We're training tons of Chinese pilots right here in Reading, out at our little airport. And hey, we have Gerald back. He has reconnected from Palo Cedro. Gerald, I'm sorry we lost you there in the crossfire.
What? Oh, that's okay. I thought when we went to break, well, you probably were through with me.
That's when we hang up on you.
I do have one more comment. This emerging technology control of the people, land, and all of our services and everything, I think that that's probably inevitable. I don't think it's stoppable, but but couldn't there be more effort put into fighting fire with fire? Could there not be programs and things set up that would counteract this type of activity and give freedom a chance to work along along the same lines? And in other words, if China tries to take over the whole Pacific Rim, let's say, and India wants to maintain some of the rights that they have as a people, could it not be possible for them to create
systems and software that would counteract this emergence of complete control of this society.
Patrick, what do you think?
Well, you know, I'm really sorry, Aaron. I couldn't hear hardly anything that he said. My gain is too low, apparently, on the signal. I can hear you okay, but I couldn't hear him. So maybe you could repeat for me the essence of what he said.
Well, he basically was considering a possible fighting fire with fire and using the same methods to fight back, in essence.
Well, I don't know offhand how that's possible. I should phrase that by pointing out that I'm not really offering any solutions to this dilemma. I haven't been able to think it through that far yet, and my first goal is to educate people on what I see, you know, on what's there, the evidence of it, what people will do to combat it is another story. And the reason that I'm a little bit hesitant to offer much of a solution is that the technocracy is the worst case of crabgrass that you've ever had in your beautiful lawn.
It's a good example.
Once you get an infestation, how do you get it out without destroying the whole lawn? And this is kind of the way it's progressing. It's just kind of creeping in underground, silently, you know, quietly, taking over control of areas that once they get it, you can't get rid of it. A good example of that is, how could you really get rid of TSA right now in America? How could you actually can the TSA, the entire TSA organization? Well, the Republicans aren't even thinking about it. The Democrats, of course, aren't thinking about it. Well, remember, too, it was brought to us originally by George Bush. So, you know, how can the people, what could the people do to get rid of TSA with all of their abusive policies and stuff and, you know, clearly moving us towards a police state? I don't know. I know people, I grouse about it. People grouse about it. They write letters to their congressmen and senators. That doesn't do any good. They protest in airports. I saw one lady went through almost nude the other day after being rejected before. Mr. Flight, she said, I'll show him. I'll just go through and show him I have nothing to hide.
Okay. How'd that work out for her?
And how old was she exactly?
Yikes.
You know, go figure, but they're strip-searching 90-year-old ladies and, you know, looking into infants' diapers and stuff, and, you know, it's just absolutely insane. How do you get rid of this nasty infestation of crabgrass in our, you know, our grass of liberty, our beautiful liberty field? It's just not, it's not nearly as easy as it sounds, and so there's so many areas right now where this is snuck in on us. Nobody was really paying attention at the first. For instance, when Bush originally passed the Patriot Act and the TSA was born, I don't think any of us today had any idea that it would be like what it is today, you see.
No.
So Patrick,
they
just said, well, that sounds, I guess that's okay. We do want to protect ourselves. And look what's happened to it. It's gone insane.
Yeah. They use our fears against us. So, Patrick,
yes.
Should this, you know, worst case scenario, what would a person's daily life look like?
Well, a person's daily life would be increasingly controlled to tell you what you could do, when you could do it, how you could do it, and why you should do it. And again, if you go back and read books like Brave New World or 1984 by Wells, you know, you'll get a clear societal picture of what it could look like. But, take healthcare, for instance. Healthcare is going to be controlled by a computer program, ultimately, that will rate you, screen you, slice you, and dice you.
Yeah, and then we're at the mercy of that. And who do you complain to again?
A software program.
We have to take a quick break. We've got the news coming up here, and so we'll be back on We the People Radio with on KCNR 1460 AM, the home of Free Fire Media, in 5 minutes. See you then.
The views and opinions of shows on KCNR are those of the hosts, guests, and callers only, and do not necessarily reflect those of the staff, management, or advertisers of KCNR Radio.
Talk Radio. Hey, we want you to join us. Call us at 530-605-4567 or stream live and join the chat room by going to wethepeopleradio.us. Just wanted to say that we're talking about technocracy, what your life would be like if it was controlled by a software program. And also wanted to say thank you very much to our sound engineer this morning. Bob is so cool. He knows 70s music and he makes coffee.
Oh, he makes coffee? I didn't figure that out. Gee, five minutes. I didn't make it back that far.
I mean, we started our show in October, and this is the first time I've had coffee when I got here.
Nice.
I love it.
People are like, yeah, we can tell.
she's quicker than normal.
So we're here with Patrick Wood, who is the editor of the August Review. Okay, Pat, on our chat room, people are writing in. Why don't we just defund all this stuff? I mean, at what point do people just stop, you know, paying for it? What are you hearing out there?
Well, you can't defund this. There's nothing really to defund. It has a life of its own.
Except TSA.
For instance, how can you defund the United Nations? You know, we could stop giving our contribution, but even if we did, that would just hardly put a dent in their overall operation. You know, how can you defund China?
No, I think they were talking about TSA. Different things like that, like the TSA. It's like, what are we going to do about those guys? They've become so invasive.
Theoretically, it could, but on a practical basis, can you really do that? Do we have the political power, we the people, do we have the political power to do that? I don't think we do.
And not only that, but so much of this is beyond the scope of just our government.
It is. Exactly. So, you know, we talk about political solutions as if political solutions are the answer to a technocracy problem, but technocracy does not operate on a political basis. In other words, the two areas are really separated from each other, and you can't the political process effectively cannot touch technocracy. And that's one reason I believe we've been so unsuccessful in fighting some of the stuff that's happening in society in the last 10, 20 years, is that we've been fighting with tools that structurally could not work to combat technocracy. I don't know if that makes sense, but, you know, it's a weapon that just will not work against technocracy. We need to rethink it, come at it from a different angle. Apparently, you know, political process in general will not stop the onslaught of technocracy.
Well, I think information helps a lot, and things like the smart grid, it's very interesting. When I first heard about the smart meters and what they were ultimately designed to do to work with the RF chips in our appliances and in Europe and other places where that grid has been up and running for a long time, that grid controls when you use your appliances, not just, and it knows what kind you use and when you're home and when you're not home. It knows all that stuff. And there's a huge element of control on that. You know, you're not allowed to wash your clothes close at this and such a time, so it shuts your washing machine off. Well, I mean, I think PG&E has done a pretty effective campaign of telling people, oh, that's not going to happen here. That's not what we're after. That's not the plan. And by the way, we already put one on your house, and we're not taking it off. So there's that going on this level. But the interesting thing I think about the smart meters is that that's a thing that the left and the right, political left and political right, both hate. I mean, it's actually a unifying thing because nobody wants it. Some don't want it for the health implications of the EMF signal there, and other people say, oh, that's stupid. But then they don't want it because of the control.
Yes.
So maybe we can use something like that to get, if you will, everybody on the same page.
Again, finding that common ground.
Well, I think that that fighting something like the implementation of smart grid is a tangible thing that one person at a time can do because it involves their house, their smart meter, and so on. We'll see how effective it is in after a couple more years go by. But you're right. The liberal side as well as the so-called conservative side are both reacting against smart grid for a number of reasons, not all just health issues. There's other reasons as well. But, you know, the human spirit does not like to be controlled any way you look at it. And I think that most of the left movement have been duped in a sense that they think that they can exercise control over other people with no repercussions, but when somebody tries to execute control over them, it's like, whoa, wait a minute.
Yeah.
And it's like,
this wasn't supposed to apply to me.
And I said, okay, now you understand what you were doing to other people all these years.
Sure.
And so there is a growing number of people that are really starting to get the picture that this is not good. The question is going to be, is it too late to do anything about it, or can we still, can we do something? If we're able to, if the country or any country is able to completely dismantle smart grid and stop it in its tracks, it will be a huge blow to the implementation of technocracy on a global basis. And again, I'm not sure it can be done, but this is probably the most effective battle line right now that we have, is to work with smart grid. And probably some of your listeners right now are wondering, well, why is that, why is smart grid an issue? How does that relate to technocracy and China and, whatever else we have that we're looking at here? In the 1930s, when technocracy was crafted, and by the way, one of the principal co-founder of technocracy in 1932 was M. King Hubbert, a man some people will recognize as being the father of, or the author of, Hubbert's peak oil theory in 1954, which became a bedrock policy brick for the eco movement and for the global warming movement. That was the same M. King Hubbert that invented technocracy in 1932. He wrote five requirements that were necessary to implement technocracy. The first one of those, and I'm quoting, is to register on a continuous 24-hour per day basis the total net conversion of energy. And number two, by means of the registration of energy converted and consumed, make possible a balanced load. We'll read the other three in a minute. But this was the essence of technocracy back then, was that energy distribution and consumption had to be monitored down to the household individual level. Well, it wasn't possible back then, but it is today, and they're doing it. And if this just was something that happened kind of gradually and spontaneously in America, I wouldn't be too concerned about it. I mean, I wouldn't like it, but I wouldn't think that there's some big master plot or something going on in the world. But when I found out that it was being implemented by tax money in the last stimulus package, that is, Obama spent a lot of that money to kickstart smart grid in the United States, when I found out that other countries were doing the same thing, like in Europe and in China and in Mexico and in Canada, with stimulus money, the same MO, And the same technology, the same vendor supplying everything on a global basis, that really got my attention, because that means it's outside the scope of just America. Somebody's pulling the strings on an international level to get smart grid implemented in all these countries and on all these continents. And if that wasn't enough to bug my eyes out, when I ran across organizations that are working on a global smart grid, in other words, a global super smart grid, to tie all of the continents together to provide a global energy management solution.
Uh-oh.
That was the end of it for me. I just, you know, I could hardly speak for about a day when I saw what these people were trying to do. And when I found out the global smart grid, the person behind it originally, that originally proposed the global smart grid, was R. Buckminster Fuller, the guy I mentioned earlier, a technocrat at heart. And this global smart grid was his brainchild back in the early 1970s. And so, okay, I see a bigger plan here. This is not just about PG&E. It's not just about Marin County or Redding or, you know, whatever. This is a, there's a bigger picture here that people need to see. It's not just smart grid in California or in Washington State or wherever, or even in Mexico for that matter. This is a global movement that's racing at breakneck speed to encircle and or to ensnare and web whatever the entire world into one common smart grid that can be administered from the top down on a global basis.
Wow. And on that scary note, we need to take a two-minute commercial. We're going to come back with more from Patrick Wood in the August Review here on We the People Radio at KCNR 1460, the home of Free Fire Media.
If your tax advisor tells you your legal deductions are red flags, it's time for North State Consultants in Redding. Our team specializes in reducing your tax liability using IRS policies and administrative law. As the most aggressive and qualified tax preparation and audit litigation specialists in the business, we offer tax and trust assistance with audits, late filings, overdue taxes, and more. For more information, visit our website at northstateconsultants.com.
This is KCNR, the home of Free Fire Media.
All the gold in California is in a bank in the middle of Beverly Hills in somebody else's name. So if you're dreaming about
and I'm not knocking California, right?
I just want to point out I'm not from here. I just live here now.
Yeah, I am. And well, I'm not going to say anything else. No, really, we're not knocking California. And I wonder whose name that bank account is in. Well, we could speculate all day long. I'll bet they're not from this country.
The good news is this stuff didn't start in California. Yay! We've now determined it didn't start here.
No, and we're not political or sarcastic on this show.
No, not ever.
Anyway, welcome back to We the People Radio. Join us. We have a lot of fun. 605-4567. Go to wethepeopleradio.us and join the chat room. We're streaming live. Welcome back, Patrick Wood. Editor of the August Review and expert on what technology has in store for us.
And ain't that the truth? All right. So we've determined it's a worldwide problem. We've determined that if we all stop paying our taxes on the same day in the United States, it wouldn't exactly stop the problem.
No, it wouldn't. I'm afraid all that would do is just create a power vacuum in which China would just walk in and completely assimilate us in lock, stock, and barrel. Anarchy is not the answer to this, clearly, although some people, you know, are increasingly, I guess, are advocating a state of anarchy. That I really don't believe that's the answer. But, you know, to put it in perspective, kind of a global perspective, there's never been a time in the history of the world that freedom did not live somewhere, in some country. And yes, there have always been some countries somewhere that were very brutal to their people, to their citizens, but there were other areas of the world that were given over to freedom and to liberty. And of course, we know that the United States is one of the premier countries in history that that has elevated liberty to the state that we have it today. But with technocracy on a global basis, we have the possibility, I believe, for the first time in history, where the concept of liberty will completely die on a global basis. And this is the most frightening thing to me. We've never had that before. There's never been a situation in the history of the world where that's been possible. And yet, in today's world, we see things like this global smart grid encircling us. And we see things like, you know, going along with it, sustainable development, Agenda 21, and so on, with all these regulations on a global basis. Freedom is being strangled right under our noses on a global basis. If they succeed, if these forces of darkness, if you will, succeeds, freedom and liberty on a global basis will die. Will it ever be resurrected again? I don't know. It may be doubtful, but may be possible, I don't know. But it's a very dangerous situation that we face on a global basis right now, and to think that it's just about America, or it's just about, you know, one state, is naive.
Or it's just about President Obama.
Yeah. That's right, or it's just about President Obama. It's just naive. And I want to point out about Obama, by the way, Obama is not a Marxist. I want to, you know, I know he had Marxist roots and stuff and influence, but Obama's a technocrat. I'm sorry, I hate to aggravate people on this. Obama is a technocrat. His primary foreign policy advisor running up to election was Zbigniew Brzezinski. This is well-known knowledge now. Brzezinski was the guy that pushed behind Obama for him to be elected in the first place. This is the same man that brought us Jimmy Carter back in 1976, another technocrat. And, you know, anywhere you see these members of the Trilateral Commission pop up with an agenda, of course, they don't tell you always right outright what their agenda is. You have to dig for it a little bit. But when you see these people backing people like Obama and so on, you're looking at, they're implementing their agenda, not ours. Let me put it that way. They have their agenda, and it's not our agenda. And the things that Obama has done since he's been in office have been things that further the cause of technocracy rather than anything else. It's not socialism, it's not Marxism, it's not communism. He's advancing the cause of technocracy. And I don't think we have time even to completely delve into that. But if you think about it and look at his actions in that light, you'll have a different view, I think, a slightly different view.
Well, you have a different, at least a different level of understanding on where we're going, and you don't get mired in all the little stuff, thinking that it's all happening just here, that the answer is just here, and if we just switch the president, poof, we have this magic solution. I guess that's the biggest fallacy we have going, is that it truly is a left-right issue, and if we could just elect a Republican, we'd be good to go. It's like, I'm hoping most people have figured out.
Well, and most of our elected officials truly are puppets. I mean, they are calling to a higher power. They're not the end-all, be-all themselves. It doesn't stop with them.
Well, like we see, you know, an executive order gets written and Congress gets bypassed, you know?
Yes.
End of story. So, you know, for those folks that are going, what is this Trilateral Commission thing he keeps talking about? Give people a bit of an overview on that, because I think that's something that gets relegated very quickly to the dustbin of conspiracy.
It does, and it's not a. It's not. We have never talked in terms of conspiracy theory. That we wrote only what we had in hard, cold, documented facts from their own policy papers. And the Trilateral Commission was founded by David Rockefeller and Zbigniew Brzezinski in 1973. And their stated order was to create a new international economic order. They made the claim that the nations of the world were interdependent and that they should be knit together in terms of an economic system. And over the years, starting in our country at least, in 1976, with the election of Jimmy Carter, Carter was a member of the Trilateral Commission, handpicked by Zbigniew Brzezinski to run for president. They captured the executive branch of the United States government with the election of Jimmy Carter. Both Carter and his running mate Mondale were members of the Trilateral Commission. And as soon as he was elected, he swept in about one-third of the total membership of the U.S. membership of the commission into high government positions, like virtually all of his cabinet were members of the Trilateral Commission. And every presidency since then has been dominated by the same group. And the thing is, they have an international membership. A third are from Asia, a third are from Europe, and roughly a third are from North America. At the time, they had only 86 from America. There's slightly more now, and the total membership is still only about 300. But these are the movers and shakers of the world that are creating this global economic system. They vote in their plenary sessions where they meet corporately every year, at least once a year. They vote on policies, they discuss policies, and then they go back to their respective countries and they implement those policies. And, of course, if they're embedded in the government, they can, by and large, achieve those policies. There's no congressional involvement in this at all. Congress doesn't have a clue what's going on, by and large. But they implement these policies, and this is how they have crafted this economic order that we have today. That, by the way, is very broken. If you know what the current system, capitalistic system, is very broken, and it's almost in its death throes on a global basis right now. But these people have brought us to the state. And, again, I'll say what's the point of this was to implement technocracy, not just to further capitalism in the end. And so their whole plan hasn't been unfolded yet. But the Trilateral Commission has done this by capturing, for instance, the presidency of the World Bank. 6 out of 8 members or CEOs of the World Bank over the years have been members of the commission. The U.S. Trade Representative position, which orchestrates all these treaties like NAFTA and CAFTA and the World Trade Organization and so on. 8 out of 10 have been members of the Trilateral Commission since 1974. You can't stack the cards that way and say that's just coincidence. It's statistically impossible.
Yeah, no kidding. You'd like those odds in Vegas.
I know. It is just absolutely statistically impossible. And anybody that looks at those facts says, oh, that's just coincidence. It just happens that they were all good people in the first place. That's why they got picked. Well, nonsense. You can't, you just can't stack the deck to that extent, and not to mention the fact that they've done the same thing in Europe. And Europe is in the condition it is today with the European Union and the currency situation and so on. The EU was created by members of the Trilateral Commission back starting again in the early 1970s. And David Rockefeller, in his 1990s biography memoirs, David Rockefeller openly admitted that the Trilateral Commission was largely responsible for the creation of the European Union.
Wow.
So this is no conspiracy. This is just the fact of the matter.
Yeah, and if you were going to, how about this? Let's take a quick break, and when we come back, I'd like you to give people some resources where they can go and do some homework on that. And if need be, maybe you can email it to us, and we'll put it on the page here with the show. But we'll be back with Patrick Wood, the editor of the August Review, here on KCNR 1460, the home of Free Fire Media.
And as I roll along, I begin to find things aren't always just what they seem. I wanna turn the whole thing upside down. I'll find the things they say just can't be found. I'll share this love I find with everyone.
If you have
have a vehicle, a boat, or even a plane that needs to be transported, you need Miller Auto Transport. In the auto business for over 40 years, we take pride in the efficiency, the professionalism, and the safety of our transport teams. Unmatched by any other auto transport or carrier company in the nation, we transport to all 50 states and overseas. To find out more or to get a quote, visit our website at MillerAutoTransport.com.
Join the conversation in our chat room,
KCNR1460.com.
You know the games people play now, every night and every day now, never meaning what they say now, never saying what they mean.
You know, it seems to me like we've got stuff coming at us from all directions, and we are in a chess game with our government, with powers beyond that.
With people who are busy doing other things when they should be minding the store.
Yep, we're in a chess game. Welcome back to We the People Radio. 605-4567, give us a call this last half hour. Check out our chat room, join us. We're streaming live at wethepeopleradio.us.
All right. Patrick, give us some resources where people can go and get smartened up on the Trilateral Commission.
I know. I hope we haven't shocked your listeners to the point where they're too speechless to call in.
No, they were actually already talking about the Borg on the chat room before you did. So, you know, we tend to go this direction. We do a lot with Agenda 21, and we try to come at these things from different angles every single time so that, you know, something resonates. You know, not everything resonates with everybody, but hopefully there's enough out there that people go, okay, this must be real.
That's right. And by the way, I also have done a lot of work with Agenda 21 and sustainable development. And those entire areas are an expression of technocracy. It's not the other way around. That hasn't brought us technocracy. These were put into play. In other words, the spin was put on those things early on according to implementing technocracy on a global basis. And so the concept of technocracy is one step above, you know, on a hierarchy, if you will, one step above Agenda 21, sustainable development, green everything, and so on, global warming, all those issues. Those were tools that they have used to bring us to the state of implementing technocracy on a global basis. And it needs to be understood that way because it shows you who's really in control, you know, who's really doing it.
Well, it also shows that at some level getting the word out isn't that complicated. I mean, you don't have to know everything about, you know, sustainable development and this and that. And we're always encouraging people to pay attention locally because all these things, even technocracy, I mean, the basic building block of implementation is coming to your house. It doesn't get closer than your house. And Bob, our engineer here, he had a question for you.
Hey, Patrick.
Hi.
I'm old enough to remember all the Trilateral Commission talk back in the 70s, and I just wondered what your take was on this. The way I perceived it, one of the reasons the elites on the left and the right hated Ronald Reagan was that Reagan wanted no part of that. He wasn't part of the Trilateral Commission.
Well, he himself initially was not. His running mate, George Bush, was.
Yes.
And by the way, that was me and Sutton doing most of the talking back there that you heard. But we had a hornet's nest going for a while. When George Bush Senior got thrown out of the primaries somewhere late 79, it looked like his political career was done. He melted down in Florida, actually, in the primary in Florida. They basically ran him out of the state, largely because of his Trilateral Commission connections and his global elite connections. And he ran off in a huff and quit. But at the Republican National Convention that year, it looked like somebody else was going to be VP with Ronald Reagan. I can't remember who it was now, but he had chosen somebody else.
Talk that he was going to choose Gerald Ford at one point.
Well, at one point it was, but at the last minute they levered in George Bush as his vice presidential candidate. Out of the blue, nobody expected him to be in, but many people believe it was that it was people like Henry Kissinger and so on that that stomped his foot in the back and says, you will take this man as your vice presidential candidate. And George Bush was one of the original members of the Trilateral Commission. So Reagan and Bush went in, Bush bringing the trilateral representation to monitor their own interests, and Bush was able to cause the appointment of several members of the Trilateral Commission to top government posts nonetheless, and in the end of it, even by the commission's own writings, they said that Ronald Reagan finally came to understand the importance of the Trilateral Commission because as he invited the entire U.S. membership to the White House for a special conference one time and dinner. And no, he was not a trilateral himself, but did he toe the trilateral line in many areas? Yes, he did, thanks to George Bush.
Kind of that crabgrass analogy you were talking about earlier.
Yeah.
And so what about, we've had a few people in the chat room asking about Rick Perry. Where do you think he fits in all this?
Rick Perry really worries me a lot because he follows in the footsteps of George Bush. Not only as the governor of Texas, but he was the guy that was railroading the Trans-Texas Corridor through Texas. He got busted on it. By and large, by a number of patriots in Texas, did a great job of dismantling that whole thing. It was a very difficult fight. But they have not destroyed NAFTA nor the Super Corridor project. But Rick Perry was the guy who was a number one globalist to attempt to bring the Trans-Texas Corridor up from Mexico and through Canada, all the way up to through the United States into Canada. And so he's now, I expect that Perry, by the way, is going to emerge as the front runner for the next election, 2012. And I wouldn't trust him any further. I would consider he's in the trilateral camp at this point.
Yeah, and it's really important that everybody listening do a little bit of research on Mr. Perry and get the word out. We need people to know.
Absolutely. He is not a friend of liberty, believe me. I don't care how many days of prayer he calls for rain in Texas. this man is not a friend of the people.
He's just been packaged well.
He's been packaged very well, and I'll tell you, I personally am sick and tired of politicians playing the religion card to get the Christian community to race after him. But Rick Perry is the kind of guy that most Christians in America would just go nuts over because, you know, he carries his Bible and he calls for a day of prayer and he's very friendly on the surface to religion. And yet, in his heart, he's 100% globalist. And, that was the same basis on which they voted for George Bush in the first place. And, they got one thing. They voted for one thing, but they got another.
Yeah, absolutely. Little bait and switch. So we've got Charles on the line. He's got a question for you. Good morning, Charles.
Yeah, good morning. The guest mentioned earlier that the political solution to this is rather ineffective, and the picture that came to mind was the ineffectiveness of the Polish horse cavalry against all the German panzers that went across the border in 39, and so my question to him is, what exactly do we do to stop this or whatever? I mean, what do we do? What can we do about it?
All right, Charles, thanks for calling, and we're gonna squeeze Mr. Wood here for 20 minutes. All right, Pat, what are we going to do about this?
Well, that's a great analogy. Tanks against horses is no contest, obviously, and they didn't last very long. I personally believe that there is no enemy that man cannot overcome, and history bears us out. There have been battles that had incredible odds in history that where one side won over against the other side, and I don't think there's an enemy that man cannot come up with a solution to counter. The problem, and I think that's the case even with technocracy today, I do believe that there are men and perhaps women as well that could put their heads together and come up with a creative way to counter technocracy and to discredit it again. It was discredited in the 1930s and rejected by the people. It's possible that that could happen again, and I think there's talent out there, brain power, that could do that. The problem is, at this point, is that people have been busy solving the wrong problem. They've been applying their genius and their creative sparks to the wrong problem, and they haven't considered how to stop technocracy, and therefore it has not stopped. And so it advances on us, and everybody's wondering, gee, how come we're doing all this good work over here on this side, and yet this other side just keeps advancing as if we're not even there? And so having awareness, you know, as we find people in society that become aware of the problem, if there's enough time left before they trap us, so to speak, my guess is that somebody will come up with some effective ways to do it. But there is no time to be lost here. I have to stress that, and that's the sense of urgency right now. There is no time to think about this and just make parlor talk. It needs to be researched by other credible researchers around the country. It needs to be exposed for what it is. And the American, you know, the people, as many as possible, need to be brought into the argument and the discussion, because that's where some of the geniuses are that could ultimately come up with a good opposition to technocracy in general.
Sure. So if we don't have a solution right in front of our face, I mean, as always, getting the word out, applying a lot of people to the problem, because I really don't believe that the bulk of people would think this is a good solution. I mean, most people wouldn't agree with this if they understood that it was out there sort of being crafted. I think most people would push back on this.
Well, certainly most people like you and me would would feel that way, and most of you listeners as well. However, there's a large body of people in our country who are conditioned to receive everything they have from the government, whether it be food or any, you know, assistance or jobs or whatever. They have no clue of what it is to exist and live on their own, and it's in a condition of freedom. And those people are the ones that scare me the most, and there's a bunch of them in our country, maybe even 50% or more in our country, that are already preconditioned to accept this kind of a system.
And that's the whole point.
Right. The conditioning has been going on for like 35 years.
Yeah.
It's been pretty doggone effective. How you and I have held out against it, who knows? But, you know, if the brainwashing that's taken place over a period of decades, you know, the dumbing down of education and so on, things like that are part and parcel of this. But the generation out there now that is used to, you know, having the government do everything for them, they will think that technocracy is just the greatest thing since sliced bread.
Yeah, that's the it's going to make everything easier, you know. Whenever it's going to make everything easier, you have to really look at what it's making easier. And when it's making your whole life easier, it's like, well, I don't think our whole life here on Earth was supposed to be easy. So we will be back. We have one segment left with Patrick Wood. So if you're planning on calling in, do it quick. 605-4567. And we'll be back with you here on KCNR 1460, the home of Free Fire Media.
Join the conversation in our chat room, KCNR1460.com.
Doctor, my eyes have seen the years and the slow parade of fears without prize. Now I want to understand. I have done all that I could to see the evil and the good without hiding. You must help me if you can.
You know, the music of the 70s was very prophetic. They saw it coming.
We were writing the music for the problems they were creating.
Yeah, absolutely.
Interesting.
Welcome back to We the People. Last 15 minutes to jump in, join us.
Yeah, you're going to catch all of this program, something that you can email to friends and family. That's the biggest value to going to WeThePeople.com or WeThePeopleRadio.com or .us. What the heck is wrong with me?
That's okay. We just changed it this week.
My lips went on break. WeThePeopleRadio.us. You'll find the archive for this program there in about an hour or two, and you'll be able to email that to folks. They will have all the information about Patrick Wood, all of the links to his website, and I would definitely jump on there and get the updates from the August. What is it, Patrick, again?
It's the August. It's www.augustreview.com.
So before
and
we.
I do strongly advise people to go there and read my white papers on not only smart grid and technocracy, but also on the Trilateral Commission. Every one of those articles is heavily documented with footnotes and resources at the end of the article. So people can continue their own research. If they want to go look elsewhere and find some of the stuff that I pulled from, they can. And it may not be 100% of what's out there, but at least it's enough to really get started in a meaningful way to do additional research. So I say have at it. That's why I wrote it that way.
Thank you. Thank you so much. And before we wrap the show up in our last 10 minutes, we've got Denise on line one. Good morning, Denise.
Hi, how are you?
Great. Thanks for joining us. Do you have a question for Patrick?
No, I have kind of a comment, and
okay.
Then maybe he could bounce something back. 2010 sent a very direct message, and I think 2012 will send a resounding message also. It might be good to let people know what's going on, but give them some sort of practical solutions in smaller sound bites or smaller increments so they feel like they can do something, because it is an overwhelming subject. And whatever their preference is or their passion, form like small groups and communities to deal with several myriads of situations, and I think people won't feel so overwhelmed and so like, well, this is so big, I can't do anything, so why should I even try?
That's a good point. What do you think, Patrick?
Well, there have been some communities that have outlawed smart grid to be implemented. That's something you can go after your town council. If you live in a small town especially, it would make it easier to do that. You're not going to probably do it in San Francisco, but you know, that's one possibility of taking some political action. Another is to be willing to stand up and be a test case for refusing to take smart meter on your house, or if there is one, sue them and tell them to get it off and force it into court. Make issues of it. People lack, I say a lot of people lack courage today to do stuff like that. They'll talk about it with great conviction in a closed room, but when it comes to actually doing something about it, they're afraid to lay down on the track, so to speak.
You know,
and I'll
give credit where credit is due. Our local Tea Party is very instrumental in fighting that issue, and we have a number of people in this community that have written letters, made phone calls to PG&E, and very strategically placed do not put a smart meter on my home right next to the current meter. So we're definitely, we've got some real fighters here.
Easy thing to do. Individually, people need to suck it up, in my estimation, and be willing to take some heat. This is kind of like the civil disobedience from the 60s in a way. But even though PG&E will claim that they have the right to do whatever the heck that they want, you still can just give them such a headache that they'll want to withdraw from it. At the very least, you're going to force their hand to be, to turn outright ugly towards the people and dictatorial. And if you cause them to show their real teeth, you'll be doing everybody in the whole world a favor, because this is the monster, if you will, that needs to be exposed. And so you may be like little mosquitoes in the end of it, but somebody needs to force PG&E either to quit or to show their real motive and their real character.
Thanks for calling in, Denise. Did you have any more comments?
No, just that one, that people need to feel like they can do something, and if it's in smaller sound bites, they'll be more willing to do something. But also, there aren't a lot of people who have the courage to do that. But the people who do have the courage to do that, should be the ones that speak, but also maybe teach the ones that don't have the courage to do that how to have courage and how to speak up.
Yeah, because, you know, if we all lay down and don't fight back, they're going to steamroller us.
Yes, they will, right. And that would be unfortunate.
And I probably ought to just say, I'll probably take some heat for this, but I'm not the host of the show, so I can do this.
It's okay. We like heat. Turn it on.
Yeah,
oh, yeah.
I just want to say that, you know, the men listening to this, women, shut your ears for a minute.
Okay.
Men listening to this need to get off their dead, you know what, their keisters, and get out there in front of the women that are fighting this. And take their rightful role to lead any revolution that's going to be led against smart grid. And I am, you know, God bless our women on one hand, people like you, Aaron, that are taking lead on this. But
and Elizabeth,
I have a very, very dim view of most men that are watching this pass by while they're watching Monday Night Football. And their wives are out there slugging it out in the streets with people like PG&E. And it's like, this is wrong. You know, the American Revolution in the first place was not fought by women. Not that they probably couldn't have fought, but it wasn't. It was fought by the men. They were the ones that had to stand up and go to battle and take on an enemy that was stronger and better equipped than they were.
It's interesting, though, this round seems to be, I mean, a lot of the principals in different, Heather Goss down there in the East Bay Patriots and Orlean Curla there with the Eagle Forum and all these different things. There are a lot of women involved.
Yeah.
Yes, and I'm not knocking that. Don't take me wrong on this.
No, but it's interesting.
But I would make a call to men to get off your dead keisters and wake up. And take your rightful role and get out there and lead the charge for Pete's sake. We don't need to be sending our women into harm's way in this. We need men to stand up and take their rightful role in this. That's another reason I think we're losing a lot of battles these days.
Another, do you think that's another sign of the times?
I do. I don't like it either, but I do. I think it's a sign of the times.
Hmm.
So I'll just kind of leave it at that. Hopefully you get my point.
We're not offended. You know, and I can't speak for Aaron, but I can speak for myself, and I have never been someone to lay down and let anybody roll over me. I've been a fighter my whole life. My activism didn't just start with the Tea Party, so on that note, I thank you for that recognition.
Yeah, she's been angry for a long time. Oh, no, that's not what I meant. Oh, is my microphone on?
Did I say that?
Did I say that out loud? No, it's true, though. I mean, and honestly, you have a lot of people with a lot of things going on. People are trying or scrambling, you know, financially and trying to deal with all these different things. But we've got to carve out a section of our focus, I guess, if you will, to helping other people get on board. And you know, people will join. You know, everybody likes to jump on something that's moving. You know, even in the old movies, you know, they always run after the moving train and jump off. And unless you were a bank robber, you typically didn't jump off of it once you got on. So I guess we just need to make this look a little bit more like a moving train, you know. Let's get everybody together and get going. So I think your website's a great place to start on this and just raise the level of awareness beyond, you know, Agenda 21 and sustainability. Those are really tools.
Well, we have to find some effective way to knock these people back. And there have been some limited victories. You know, I'm reasonably close to Tom DeWeese of American Policy Center. He's done a great job in pushing back against the ICLEI movement across America that's infected 600 or 700 cities in America with United Nations programs. And that's related to Agenda 21 as well. There are isolated incidences where there's some good success stories now. States' rights issues are doing pretty good in some states now. But, you know, that's still just kind of scratching the surface, and we haven't really won any major battles yet. And of course, in the end of it, if we don't, you know, we can win a lot of wars, but we could still lose the war.
Yeah, so, absolutely.
I know. So we need a lot more involvement of people and awareness of people across the country on all levels, at every possible level you can imagine. We need them. But if we don't communicate to the people behind the scenes in Washington, we could change governments 15 times, congressmen and senators 15 times over, and do no good if we don't get rid of the people behind them that are pulling the strings on this new international economic order nonsense. If we don't get rid of those people, they're just going to bring, all the politicians just going to bring us more of the same. We have to go behind the political system and get rid of this super lobby that grabbed a hold of us back in the 70s and won't let go. We need to get rid of those people. And so far, hardly anybody is willing to even acknowledge that they exist, much less launch a campaign to get rid of them. Hmm. So you've got to get rid of the source of all of these movements. And I think if you do, if it was possible, most of the movements would wither and die.
And and bottom line is, if they plug into your website, you can give them information on that, correct?
Absolutely. Absolutely. It's a place to start. I'd say get there. Anybody that would listen to this and not be willing to go and read at least 5 or 6 papers off of my website and then follow the resources on it and see if it's not true. Anybody that would listen to this broadcast not do that basically is full of, I'm just going to say, you're full of hot air. Don't talk about it anymore if you're not willing to go at least put a little shoe leather on it and find out if it's true or not.
Good point.
We've got to face reality in this. We must face reality. We can't keep boxing at shadows.
Absolutely. All right. Thank you. We've got Pat Wood from the August Review. Been talking about technocracy, the Trilateral Commission, Smart Grid. We're out of here for
Thanks
another
for joining
week.
Us.
Thanks for joining us. WeThePeople.us. You can hear the archive and send it to your friends.
The man come and take you away. Stop. Hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's growing now. Stop.
KCNR's Shasta Redding.